This is the Mysterious Matters of Max Metters podcast. Mysterious Matters of Max Metters is a novel I wrote in 1991. This podcast is a kind of audiobook. If this is the first episode you're hearing, please go back and start with episode one, which explains what's going on here. Mysterious Matters of Max Metters by Peter Gelman. Chapter 5. In the house again, it was dark and hot. I was hot and dark because Mary was with me. There were glib sneakers and smoky handshakes, spasms of bad bongos, and flashes of little pipes, small crowds full of the mumbles. There were about 100 people, some known, many strangers. It was Lapcadio's third annual open mic night. After a few liters, three of us agreed to grudge some punky leaders. Tim sideswiped some car crash chords on his cheap Hong Kong imitation Strat. Arthur beat the bongos in a bad way that was satisfying the urge to bump about. In a couple weeks he was splitting town, and our experiment with bad rock and parole was our way of bon voyaging him. My stomach irped with hunger, and I fondled an itch to move on the oomptaka boomptaka of the drumlets. When I grumped and grunted my words, it was a far away disembodied voice that parlayed my view. Ah, darling, since you died and left me so selfishly, since you no longer share your lovely strong body with me, since your desirelessness is the cipher of your sad love verse. Okay, 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 you died. Okay, 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 you moved to Chicago. Okay, 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 I still hear you. I still listen for you behind my door. On the train, I thought I saw your face, your cold face, in the blur, the trackside blur of gravel. Now I stare down from my window, on the chilly, lampless trash, all the while. And even now, a shadow searches for something, something, something I could not digest. I didn't look at the mumbling masses, all the time aware, though, Mary was in there somewhere. Weeeer! Kip a cop. What? Something outside my window. Yes, an omen as I write this. Great black horse cantering over the cobblestones, tether held by a man driving a VW Beetle alongside. Mary drove a bug, too. Just as I typed her name and went back to Tim and Arthur. Is it working? Arthur asked us. Dunno, Max. I said, bleh. Nonsense, French sounding. I didn't want to lose my looseness by returning to normal question and answer. Okay, Arthur shrugged. See, I was mad at myself because while I was saying my poem, I got the feeling like I wanted to say more, but didn't have the words in me, that I didn't understand something yet. The crowd was chatting loudly to one another and drinking keg beer from plastic cups. Tim heard that they were mostly friends of this folk punk band from the university that was going to play. The lights were hurting my eyes, sharp down into my mind. I did not see Mary in the shapes and shadows out there. "Mary, give me a word, please," I said into the microphone. From somewhere I heard her say a word, but I didn't understand it. It had three syllables and it started with a V, and I forgot to ask her what she said until not 2 but 4 years later, and she could not remember it herself. She said V, and I thought, violet. So I started the song by thinking about the color violet, and the music began. Sultry dark, cham-a-ram-ram guitar, with a bongo, chick-a-doo-doo, chick-a-doo-doo, backbeat. An experiment in vagrancy led me to see the color of dear memory. Under the cloudy red refinery, the fireworks, behind the stickly trees, beyond the beyonder, beyond yonder hills, head for the hills, gulp cyanide pills, an old man on trial for crimes against humanity. Then I walked back, and when I came back, I said, it was a euthanasia fantasia when I fell in love with you under the Texaco sign behind the dry vine desert in a small nowhere of quiet, cool transit, lost on the freeway, found in an American mystery. I made the motion to cut it short, but they didn't. So I went deeper down into the time I was sleeping on the side of the road in Texas, and that gave me the finish of it. I remember hunching by the side road. Do you remember? The tree stump. Baroque. With adolescent love letters. The graffiti. Under the Texaco sign. By the wobble of the mothy light. The windy wobble of the desert candle. The mechanical aurora borealis. The violet of the refinery fires. I saw you in a ghost of pink memory. You remember when you told me your dream and I was dead? Oh, then I felt such a highway chill. The red candle melted into twisted figures locked in love. And the crimson clouds shouted their libation to plutonium. Sometimes we embraced so tight we dripped vagrance, lonely drops of melted wax through the woody cracks, the hay. The steers lulled under the Texaco sign by the old dry vine. The night birds woke and twicky twicky in the night. Twicky twicky in the night, twicky twicky in the night. And then the shadows went to town. They sent me a telegram. It said the midnight buzz was bringing me to your memory. It came in a fragile box 100 minutes early. I lockered it in Gallup and mailed myself the key. The last song we decided not to do. Then at the last minute we changed our minds and made a terrible lot of wild noise. And Tim broke his E string, so he was happy. And the crowd hooted for him when he held up his scraped up Hong Kong axe. We stepped off the little stage. And back, in a room with pot smoke, big barbar books, and 19th century French circus prints. De folie bergère, nala damajanti, charmeuse hindu, snake charmer nala. We shook hands because it was goodbye. What do you think? Tim asked, looking hopeful. Abomination, I said, and we all laughed. Talk to you a minute? Walk you out? Asked Arthur, tilting toward me. Later, all right, Gotta go, I told them again, feeling that it was obvious I couldn't bear saying goodbye. Not obvious that I was annoyed with Arthur for leaving. She's waiting, I thumbed the mumbles behind me. I combed my fingers through my hair. It was like wire. Gumby knots and pokey curls, green, orange, and bendable freak out. Here comes your date. I took Mary from Lafcadio's gossip. And we walked outside and it was suddenly so cold. I offered her a piece of gum and she said thanks and took her little hand out of her glove and reached out her hand to take it. And for a quarter second, our fingertips just barely touched. And an electric shock ran through me. She saw me react and smiled. I was embarrassed about the show, thinking it was a bad idea, but I couldn't say anything about it. I saw her watching the snow fall, and when she turned to look at me, I looked away. I felt unsafe, like the FBI had me on their eye, and my heart was fluttering sick. I think she likes me. I think I like her. Free or flee, I wondered. Not in love yet, but soon. Watch out. She's got a loose wire. That's what you like. Shut up. You are just going to a movie. Calm down. I was feeling confused, so I tried to distract myself with the pain of my nails pressed into my fisted palms hidden in my jacket pocket. She drove across the river to the old neighborhood theater. We bought the tickets, and we were too early. We walked past the little Midwest houses with gray wood smoke drifting out of the chimneys and warm, yellow-lit windows, and not a soul in sight. In the darkness, we stopped at a school playground and swung on the swings, and I let my head fall way back, holding onto the two chains, and I could see the snowflakes spinning, tossing, falling down from eternity onto my face, and lighting on me so gently, cold and soft, wet like kisses. So many snowflakes falling. I racked my brains for something to say, looking at her, and said, "Aren't you cold? We could wait in the lobby." "I'm not cold." The old styrofoam snow was now covered with fresh snow, as soft as down, and it muffled our footsteps. The snow was getting deep, and it was sticking on the roads, and I felt the heaviness of each boot as I lifted it out of the snow, trudging. The night seemed warmer now that it was snowing. I opened my big jacket so I wouldn't start sweating, and I wondered, if we liked each other, why can't we just talk? I picked up some snow and started to eat it. In the distance, the theater sign hung there, sad and missing an unimportant letter like an old movie should. Splendor in the grass. We walked a ways in silence, and I asked, "Want some ice cream?" offering a handful of snow. She smiled and shook her head. I had bought the tickets, so she insisted on buying the popcorn and candy. I forgot all about her during the movie most of the time. I felt her next to me during the scene where Natalie Wood is lying sorrowfully lovelorn, dream lost in her tub, and her authoritarian mother comes in and asks her if she is still pure, meaning still a virgin. And finally, the daughter stands up with her arms spread out, wet and naked, facing her mother and cries out hysterically, "I'm still pure, mother. I'm still pure." And I felt uncomfortable being next to Mary and feeling the movie so strongly because I didn't know what would happen after the movie, but I thought I'd do what I wanted to happen. Then the movie was over and we started walking to the car. A lot more snow had fallen, but the snow had stopped and a wind picked up and I felt the coldness bite into me. We walked slowly and silently for a long time. We don't have a thing in common, I thought. If we can't talk, how close can we get? The wind had blown all the clouds away, and the sky was black and violently burning with stars, and I saw patterns in them that weren't constellations or shapes of animals. They were just patterns that stood out. We were talking about the movie, what we liked and didn't like. And she started asking about my choice of spontaneous lyrics. Why spontaneous? Because, I explained, I had the idea that spontaneous words could be more true than contrived and biased words. But I admitted that I thought the result was an abomination because I could not help being self-conscious, thinking even within my thoughts. And thus, I could not quite say what I was trying to say, because maybe it wasn't possible to be spontaneous enough to resolve the mystery of what was only true. No, it wasn't the resolution I wanted, but I wanted to get down deeper into the mystery so that there was a kind of light that gave off the shadow of the resolution. I realized that conversation was easy as long as you didn't think about it, only now I was thinking about it. In humor and frustration, my sentence drawled off into a growl that was a shout and a laugh, and I suddenly felt courageous, and I picked up her little body and lifted her up high and threatened to throw her in the snowbank. Only she laughingly fought the threat by pulling me down with her arms around my neck. Then I was lying partly on top of her in the soft snow, and I asked, "Give up?" And she kissed me. At that, I pressed my cheek against hers, which was cold on the surface, but then the warmth rose up. Then she was driving me home in the buzzing VW, and she didn't want to talk much about herself, only her roommate. Her roommate had had an abortion 3 years ago, and now she sadly celebrated the unborn's third birthday with candles and tears, and she really wanted to have a baby, only she was not attracted to men much anymore. Furthermore, she was working in an abortion clinic as penance, facing the Christian protesters, and Mary added this unnecessarily as a signal to me, I wondered, that it was nice that her roommate gave her free birth control pills. I didn't find out much more about Mary except that she said she was molting and revolting, revolting in both senses of the word, and a bad person, though not all the time a bad person. I kept asking questions, and she said that she had almost decided to go to law school and become part of the problem. Somewhere near the park waiting for a light, I mentioned that I played b-ball, and it impressed me that she knew I didn't mean baseball. I meant hoops. She said she used to play basketball in high school and college, and although she was short, she could jump high because she was trained to be a ballet dancer, although Point gave her corns. I asked to be let off at the park so I could walk the rest of the way. Thank you for listening. Mysterious Matters of Max Matters by Peter Gelman is available as a traditional paper book through Popular Online Booksellers. It is also available as an ebook for Kindle and Nook and other formats. The Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License protects this work.